Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Happy days are here again. At least today, we're going to enjoy this day today with the news. And you know what I'm talking about when I'm talking about this being a happy day for a lot of folks. Ah, yes. That weasel, Tom DeLay, is out of our hair. And are we glad? Oh, yes, indeed. I tell you, we'll probably have some fun with that today. Don't you imagine? Yes, indeed, we will. Going to have an interview about it a little later. Melanie Sloan, who is the executive director of CREW, that's the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. She's going to be here to talk about Mr. DeLay, and we'll have a lot of comments, I hope, a lot of comments from you about Mr. DeLay. You can call us, you know, with your comments. If you're yay or nay, if you're someone that absolutely excuse me, I try to say that with a straight face. If you're somebody that can't do it, if you're somebody that loves Tom DeLay and you respect the man for all that he's done for this country, why? Or if you don't, and I suspect there's more of the latter than the former, give us a call at 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We'd love to hear from you today. We're going to try and have a little fun with this today. I imagine a lot of the show will be about it. I first learned it last night, late. Isn't it kind of strange when a Washington politician tells us he's going to make an announcement tomorrow, and he tells us tonight what the announcement tomorrow is going to be? Have you ever figured out what that's going to be, why that is? I don't know. There's just crazy things that pop up in American culture. I'm going to make an announcement tomorrow that I'm going to quit. Well, didn't you just make the announcement? That's like saying, you know, where we live in southern Florida, a lot of the real estate ads advertise within walking distance to the beach. Well, hell, every place is walking distance to the beach if you got enough time, isn't it? Did you ever think of it that way? I don't know. Thank God, hallelujah, Tom DeLay, probably the most evil rat in our government, is gone. And he's still occupying his seat there, but we've done it. And my congratulations to the folks in Sugarland, Texas, who finally came to their senses and showed through the polls that Tommy DeLay might not be elected again. And maybe to escape the humiliation of being beaten in his own district, he quit. You folks in Texas and Sugarland, you've restored a little bit of my faith in the people of the Lone Star State. Those are red ones anyway, the red state part of it. Don't you love the way Tom DeLay left, trying to be the martyr? Forced to resign because he's a Christian. Oh, yeah, don't you love that? How long is it going to be before he's hit the lecture circuit for the Christian right and portrays himself as being somehow symbolically crucified on a cross right next to Jesus Christ? He'll be doing that. Will he dress in a white robe and a fake halo? After all, you know, we evil Democrats drove this good and pure of heart man from office simply because he's a believer. That's the story, you know. He's the first casualty in the war against Christianity. That's what he's going to be preaching. You can bet your bottom dollar on that. He's already throwing out that phrase he loves to say, the Democrats are engaging in the politics of personal destruction. Oh, yeah. I wonder, though, what exactly was the real reason he quit? Can it be that he knows he's soon going to be occupying the cell next to Duke Cunningham and his longtime pal, Jack Abramoff? Does he see the handwriting on the wall that he's finally been caught with his hand in the big business bribery cookie jar? Is he having dreams of being fitted for a striped suit and leg irons? God, I hope so. I might as well be honest and admit, you know, fully admit it. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, gee whiz. I detest Tom DeLay. I despise him for what he's done to the prestige and the reputation of the Congress of the United States of America. I despise him for turning the Capitol building into his own private money laundry. I despise him for willingly doing the dirty work for this filthy, corrupt Bush administration. I was visiting the House of Representatives recently, and his demeanor on the floor of the House was absolutely intolerable to me. He marched around the House chamber as if he were Caesar, bullying the Democrats who were trying to speak about an issue concerning consumer debt in regard to the awful bankruptcy bill that was passed with the help of some Democrats who, like DeLay, doesn't have a conscience. Anybody that voted for that bill doesn't have a conscience, Republican or Democrat. And when the Bushies took office, I made the statement that the Bush administration would go down in history as the most inept, corrupt gang Washington's ever seen. And believe me, I don't take any solace in being proven right. Lady Liberty's got to be crying knowing that these guys are lying, cheating, and stealing their way to the big house. The question is, who's next? Is it going to be Dick Cheney? Will it be Karl Rove? Who's next? Will they shield Bush from ultimately being impeached? Will he face war crimes? How deep does this thing go? How poisoned is the well of our government right now? How many millions, really how many billions of these people stolen and diverted to their friends in their own bank accounts? This political war is far from over, and we can't quit now, but this is a wonderful day for America. The fact that the Bush regime thought it necessary to jettison DeLay is evidence that they're extremely worried that they're losing their grip on their war of terror against the American people. That's right. Their real war of terror is not against foreigners. It's against the American people. And those American people are starting to get smart, and I see it as our job here on the Guy James Show to help make them just even a little bit smarter. I wonder what really happened to Tommy DeLay. Really, do you want to know what I think really happened? I'll tell you what really happened to Tom DeLay was that the pressure from you, from us, the pressure finally got to the right people, and they couldn't any longer ignore the crimes of this thug-like congressman who's made life miserable for anyone in the House of Representatives who didn't want to play by his rules. Democrats and Republicans, he made their lives miserable. Well, Mr. Former Majority Leader, you're finally going to get your comeuppance. Judgment Day is coming, and I've got a feeling that now you're no longer wielding that awesome power of the sledgehammer you used to push, shove, and intimidate other congressmen with to do your bidding. Now that your power is gone, you're going to be laid bare for the law to finally get you. And Mr. DeLay, you're going to deserve everything that you get. You deserve to. I'm only sad that you've quit Congress. I wish you could have got thrown out. I wish you would have stayed around and got beaten in an election. Yeah, last night he said, I'm going to announce tomorrow that I'm not running for re-election and I'm going to leave Congress. DeLay, who turned 59 on Saturday, said during a 90-minute interview on Monday, I'm very much at peace with it. He notified President Bush in the afternoon. DeLay and his wife Christine said they'd been prepared to fight, but that he decided last Wednesday, after months of prayer and contemplation, to spare his suburban Houston district the mud fest to come. He said, and I quote, this had to become a referendum on me, so it's better for me to step aside and let it be a referendum on ideas, Republican values, and what's important for this district. Isn't it something? Tom DeLay talking about Republican values. Actually, I don't think anybody could be a better spokesman for the real Republican values. Lie, cheat, steal, grab, take, oppress, attack, do anything you want to do in order to get your way and so you can get an extra buck in your pocket and more power. Those are the Republican values. Those are the words they live by, and so there couldn't be a there couldn't be a better spokesman for the Republican Party than Tom DeLay. And I'm talking about the modern-day Republican Party. I so often mention, I'm not talking about the Republican Party of Goldwater and Eisenhower and Rockefeller. No. It's this recent Republican Party that's come to power, this ugly monster that's been unleashed upon the American public by unwitting Republican voters who thought they were voting in actual Republicans. But gosh, the polls prove right now that a lot of you regular Republicans have been duped, and you know it. But isn't it something? Tom DeLay is dropping out because he says a mud fest just isn't his style. There isn't anybody that's ever been better at slinging mud than Tom DeLay. Finding out that Tom DeLay is leaving his powerful office in the Congress and getting out, it's kind of like finding out that Satan's been fired from his job in hell. That's just what it reminds me of. I probably had the same esteem for Satan as I did for Tom DeLay. In my lifetime, I have not ever seen a politician more despicable, more low than Tom DeLay. And so, I thank the good people of Sugarland, Texas, for making at least seem in the polls that he might lose, and therefore he quits. But is that and remember when you're talking about this guy DeLay, his demeanor has always been that of just a horrible, horrible man. I mean, a horrible man. And we're going to have Melanie Sloan on to talk about it a little later. And I doubt that you've seen the end of Tom DeLay. I really do. He's the original story on DeLay's retirement. They said, make no mistake, DeLay took one for the team here. This is what a Republican blog I went to said. I wanted to see what they were saying. And they said, make no mistake, DeLay took one for the team here. Now, taking one for the team. This is the same Tom DeLay, taking one for the team, who told an airport screener when DeLay was asked to put out a cigar in the no-smoking area of an airport. The airport official told DeLay the government made the rules, and DeLay told him, I am the government. This is the same guy that took one for the team? That's ludicrous. It goes on to say, this right-wing blog site says, with the shadow of the Earl Circus hanging over him, old Tom had a tough re-election fight with the climate of left-inspired Bush hatred that is engulfing American politics. This is a race we can't afford to lose. Oh, my. Michelle Malkin, she had some great comments about it today. And another right-wing blog I was looking at today said, the Dem-created scandal has resulted in an expensive and harsh campaign. Oh, Tom was going to have a harsh campaign. Harsh campaign. The DeLay has chosen to have no part in. Although his decision is disappointing, it is understandable. And it's now more likely that a Republican will win the district. Well, 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 well. It says, mark my words, you haven't seen the last of old Tom. When the circus that is Ronnie Earl investigation leaves town, DeLay will be free, fully exonerated, and ready to seek office again. Perhaps this time a senator or governor or more. It's fun to read some of those right-wing blogs. Some of those folks are absolutely half nuts. And let me quote you from this one. It's happened again. The loony left and their attack dogs in the liberal media have driven another good man from office. This is where we pause for the crocodile tears. Of course, we've seen this all before. Listen to this. We've seen this all before with Senator McCarthy and President Nixon. In the latter case, the Democrat coup helped lead to a disastrous civil war in Cambodia. For helping get Nixon, you know, did a lot of you remember a lot of Nixon's own people, Republicans, helped get him out of office? It says, I don't think the consequences will be quite as severe this time with delay, but this isn't good. Well, my. Isn't it something? Hey, we're going to pause for a break right now. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away. Say you. I'd love to hear from you. 866-546-5254 is the name, is the number. 866-546-5254. And don't worry, it doesn't hurt a bit to call. I was laughing during the break. I was looking at some posts on the Democratic Underground. And by the way, hello to all the folks on Democratic Underground. I know there's obviously from the numbers I'm looking at here right now, there's many, many, many of you listening, and the folks over at Democrats.com and other sites around the net, glad to have you with us today. But there's a guy on Democrats, DemocraticUnderground.com. His signature name is Democrat Forever. That's with a four, letter four. And he's writing a story about Bush. And you ever reading along and just, you know, you're perfectly serious and all something, you know, something all of a sudden tickles your funny bone. And I read this earlier today and I just couldn't help laughing about it. It is funny. He called Bush chuckle nuts. I love that. That's you got to admit, that's funny. Chuckle nuts. That's one of the better descriptions. I can't help it. So Democrat Forever, I really like that. Hey, and while I'm talking about some folks in Democratic Underground, I'd like to thank Debbie and Greg and Jeannie and the Miller sisters and the Bermans from over at Palm Beach, beautiful Palm Beach, Florida. All of you folks from for tuning into the show and sending me good news articles. Sometimes we use them on the program. It's great to have you along with us, and it's great to have you participate in the program that way by helping out the research department. I was noticing a little while ago there was a interesting discussion going on Democratic Underground about the worst and best presidents, your list of worst and best presidents, and one of the respondents to the thing said they wanted your top five. And somebody answered, he thought Bush should get all five spots of the worst one. So I don't know. We've all got our favorites. And of course, my favorites, without a doubt, Harry Truman and Franklin Roosevelt. They're right up there at the top for me. And worst, well, without question. And I think we now know that even before this term is even over, no matter what happens the rest of the way out, we now know it is carved in stone that this is the worst by far. The worst president we've ever had in the history of our nation. As we've said before, the descendants of Warren G. Harding and Herbert Hoover got to be rejoicing in the streets and know they're not on the bottom anymore. So congratulations to Mr. Bush for attaining that lofty perch as being the worst ever. Who was it? Sammy Blue on Democratic Underground. He's talking about delay. He said now he's saying he's sparing the voters of his district from a dirty campaign against his liberal Democrat opponent, bringing the Michael Moores. Oh, he's saying that the Democrats were going to bring Michael Moore and Barbara Streisand down to Texas to campaign against him. Why? I guess old Tommy's afraid of Michael Moore and Barbara Streisand? Gee. And he goes on to say, give me a break, Tom. You're going to jail, and you know it. These are lame-ass excuses. You're going to go to prison, and you know it. Well, keep those cards and letters coming. Always interesting to hear what you have to say. Well, I'm having one of those days. We're in our allergy season here in Florida, and I've never had allergies before, but I think I have one. After the show today, I think I'm going to get a hold of a stockbroker someplace and buy some stock in the Kleenex company, because I sure been going through a lot of them lately. Just one of those things, never had that problem in my entire life, and all of a sudden kind of just sneaked up on me. So if I sound a little funny today, that's why. Got some sort of a little thing going on there of some kind. Tommy DeLay, and I wrote down some notes about Tommy DeLay today. In his own words, he says, you can't prove to me one thing that I've done for my own personal gain in Congress. And then he showed off a picture of his wife, Christine, and their daughter, Danielle, with President Ronald Reagan. This is after saying he's never done anything to feather his own nest. And then after this, he shows off this picture of his wife and daughter with Ronald Reagan. He said, I had to withhold my vote, he said, to get my daughter's picture with Ronald Reagan as a freshman congressman. He didn't want to vote with Reagan on that, but he did so he could get a picture. And I've never done anything for my own personal gain. You know, and someone else said, unless he's about to be indicted for more stuff, this is a pretty smart and maybe even principled move. You know, the thing is, folks, Tom DeLay doesn't do principled. Not at all. And what do you think? Do you think Tony Rudy is one of his staff members, former staff members, his plea deal the other day? You think that's got an effect on all this? And, of course, the Bush White House involved here. Asked by reporters how strongly Bush was backing DeLay, the White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan said, strongly as he ever has, which is strongly. Okay. But I think there's got to be something bad coming down the pipe that he knows about. Otherwise, there's no way, no way that he's quitting after winning that primary so easily. And I, we're going to talk with Melanie Sloan about this in just a little while, but I think he's probably the most corrupt member of the House currently in office, and I consider the K Street Project probably the best example of organized extortion to have ever existed in the United States. And if you don't know what the K Street Project was, we're going to have Melanie explain it to you. She can do it better than I. And in other words, you know, I despise the tactics he's used to gain power at any cost, including his pride and joy, that awful Texas redistricting scheme. And does he want to hurt the country? Maybe not. But does he blind himself in the name of his twisted ideology to the harm that he's done, in fact? Probably. DeLay's got to be in serious trouble. It was only 3 weeks ago when he won the primary and made some very aggressive statements about the November election. And I believe he even called the Democratic candidate the attack dog of Barbara Streisand and Nancy Pelosi. It's amazing some of the things he said. It is really, really fascinating some of the things he said. We're going to head off to a break right now. And don't go anywhere. We'll be back with our guest very, very shortly.
You're listening to The Guy James Show. You're listening to The Guy James Show.
With the Guy James Show. Welcome to the program this afternoon. Glad to hear from you. And 866-546-5254. A great day. A great day. I don't know. I just woke up this morning feeling good. Couldn't help it. Been smiling all day long. All day long. Simply on account of the old bug man is gone. Long live the bug man, I guess. Hey, let's go to the phone. Who do we have? We got Juanita on the phone. Hello, Juanita.
How are you today?
Good. And yourself?
I'm pretty good. A little bit angry.
What are you angry about today?
Well, I just happened to watch the Senate for a little bit, and I saw a Larry Craig from Idaho.
Yes.
We're talking about the, the immigration?
Uh-huh.
And he was sounding pretty good until he started talking all through it about the jobs that American people don't want to do or won't do. Just all through it. Over and over again. And it's an insult to the whole citizens of the United States. And because the world is listening. And another thing that was, was like back at 9/11, they were saying that, Americans are afraid. Well, if we're a Christian nation, we're supposed to trust in God and not live in fear.
Well, there's been plenty of fear, and the Bushes have taken full advantage of that. I think they've ruled with fear. They've got reelected with fear, mm-hmm. that they were somehow protecting us. And you even hear that today. Oh, how many attacks has there been since 9/11? Well... maybe none, but I doubt that's got anything to do with what Mr.
Right.
Bush has done and the Department of Homeland Security.
Yeah, and I got a cute little saying for you. It doesn't sound political, but I think it can be. It says it's the Betty Reese. I don't know who that is, but anyway, give her credit. If you think you are too small to be effective, you have never been in bed with a mosquito. That's cute.
Yes, it is.
Something to think about.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Hey, thanks for your call, Juanita.
Okay.
Good to hear from
you
today.
Bye-bye.
866-546-5254. I mentioned we're going to have our guest on. She's currently on a conference call, and we're going to hold that up for about five more minutes yet until she gets free. She got tied up on a conference call she couldn't get away from. Our job here on the Guy James Show is to put out the truth, and I fully realize that in the talk world, the talk radio world, we're a small voice. We don't have 20 million listeners like what's his name, the Pill Junkie and Hannity and those people. We don't have those kinds of numbers, but I want you to remember one thing. And I think there couldn't be a little phrase any more appropriate than this. A myth that is shared by many is always more acceptable than the truth as told by one. And that's something we know to be true. You know it to be true. Of course, Limbaugh and Hannity and O'Reilly and the likes of those guys know it to be true. That's why they get away with what they do get away with. They can tell more lies in one day than the average guy could in a year, but they know that because so many people are listening, a lot of that stuff's going to stick to the wall. And it does. And they're right. It does stick. And they know it, and they take full advantage of that fact all the time. We're waiting about five or six more minutes yet until we get... the executive director, Melanie Sloan, of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, called CREW. Many, many stories going out today about Tom DeLay, and I'm not going to hide the fact. I thought today, should I get on here today and be a model of decorum and be a good sport and say, well, that's what happens, and I'm not going to say anything bad about the man because he's leaving and all that. I considered what should I do today, and I thought, no. As my grandfather used to say, and quote an old boy who used to work for him, be what you is, even if you was old and ugly, be what you is, and I is happy about this today. I really am, and I know a lot of you are as well. I've seen rejoicing going on, and I know it makes the right angry, and maybe it is a bit... a bit childish of us to act this way, but, you know, we've had these frustrations pent up for so long, wondering when the card, the house of cards is starting to, is going to start falling. It it got close to starting the fall with Scooter Libby being indicted, and then now Tommy DeLay leaving, and the question really is, who is next? Who is next? It's going to be somebody. Something big has happened recently to drive him out of the office, and I can't wait to find out what it is. I mean, I really don't care what it is, but I'd like to know. I guess I would. I do care. Something big has happened in that Tom DeLay office. He's gotten some news from somebody that somebody's going to rat him out, and he's preparing for it. But don't be a bit surprised if he's not out there as Mr. Martyred Christian now, because as of late, he spoke at that conference last week about the war on Christianity. Just the kind of guy that would do that. You know, he's just another stupid, self-righteous, arrogant ass who thought he was too cool to get caught. He knew damn well he was doing slime work. He just didn't care. Because his heart was with Christ. And to most Republicans, that's all you need for a free pass. You can do anything you want as long as you go to church on the Republican church on Sunday and pretend to be a great Christian, benevolent, kind, and gentle man. On Monday, come Monday, in that Republican, right-wing, evangelical Christian community, you can be the biggest rat in the world Monday through Saturday. But all you got to do is Sunday go in and talk to Pastor Falwell or Pastor Robertson or talk to James Dobson, any of that stuff, and that'll get you off the hook. That will. And it's an odd thing. It really is an odd thing to me that those that's the way it is. That is the way it is. They'll overlook anything. Or is all this against DeLay, is it just anger at him for the tactics that he's used to advance his political agenda? His political agenda, if you look at it closely, broadly stated, really and truly is nothing more than corporate authoritarian. I can't talk today. I know what I want to say. Authoritarianism. It really goes against everything this country reportedly stands for. And it goes against everything any decent human being ought to stand for. The tactics can broadly be stated as power to truth without regard for any broader principle. Someone asked me if it is, do you consider him evil? Is he evil in the sense you think he wants to hurt the country? And I consider what he wants to do to the extent that he has any conceptual and philosophical goal beyond being in power over something to be antithetical to everything this country stands for. You know, like Karl Rove, he knows he can get the attention of enough voters to win election, and that's all he needs. And the only reason he isn't trying it again is because he knows, because of the current polls, or because he knows something the rest of us don't know yet, that he wouldn't win. I don't think he's ever given the country a moment's thought. You know, does my disdain for him even extend to what he's done with foster children? You know, he ran all those ads about foster children when he's running. You know, I think his campaign ads showing his foster children were nothing more than a scheme to get votes. Tom DeLay has shown no compassion for kids in any of the legislation the Democrats have tried to pass. So what the hell makes anyone think he's given a tinker's damn about any kids? You know, Ted Bundy had excellent manners. Guess we're having a little phone problem here. We'll get that straightened out in a minute. But, you know, the right-wing website Powerline came up with a splendidly wing-nutty response to the news, and I'm quoting them. If you want to see some kooks, go to this right-wing website, Powerline. DeLay was an effective leader, albeit too liberal in recent years. It's possible, of course, that he did something wrong along the way, but there's no evidence of that in the public domain. As far as we can tell, at the moment, DeLay appears to be yet another victim of the Democrats' politics of personal destruction, the only politics they know. Are they talking about the same Tom DeLay we are? Are they insinuating that DeLay isn't the master of politics of personal destruction? I wonder, as they seem to be. Hey, I think we finally got our phone problem figured out here, and as promised, we have Melanie Sloan along with us. She's the Executive Director of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, known as CREW, and we're happy to have her along with us today. Welcome, Melanie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, it's good to talk to you on this very historic, eventful day. I imagine you've talked to a lot of folks about this today.
I have been talking to a lot of people. It is a very big day and a very good day for Congress and for the American public.
It certainly is. I've been wishing for this for about 12 years, I'd have to say. I know you're probably not listening to the program today, but we, right after our opening of the show today, we played the old Democratic song, Happy Days Are Here Again. And we thought at least for one day we'd have a little fun with this.
I think that's right. I think today we should all just be pleased that our democratic system of government is working as it should. A really corrupt and terrible member is out, and it looks like the Justice Department is going to be prosecuting him, and that's even a Republican-led Justice Department. So all of the calls that have been made about, you know, Democratic partisanship, and that's the reason that DeLay has had all these problems, those just ring hollow, knowing that the Republican-led Justice Department is now leading the charge against him.
Yeah, I think they're going to be, now that he can no longer cajole and coerce and intimidate his fellow members of Congress, now that they know they're safe, finally, from him, they're going to be people turn on him, I think. I can't remember at the moment, who was the congressman from Michigan that they turned the night of the...
Nick Smith.
Yeah.
The Nick Smith incident where they basically said, we'll give you $100,000 for your son's reelection campaign if you vote for this Medicare bill, and if you don't, we'll make sure he never wins election.
Right. That thing may, you know, that sort of thing, at least with Mr. DeLay, I don't know about Bonner. Don't know what will happen with him. But I had told our listeners a little earlier today that I was going to wait and have you explain probably what I consider to be one of the very worst things any congressman has ever done in Washington, one of the most low-down, dirty, rotten tactics, is Mr. DeLay's K Street Project. Can you explain that to our listeners?
Sure, and it is one of the worst things that's ever happened in Congress. The K Street Project was designed to stop any money going to any Democrats. Basically, what happened was every Wednesday there would be a meeting, and all the lobbyists and members of trade associations in town would come in, and they would tell Tom DeLay, and Rick Santorum also was in charge of this program, and they would tell them, well, here are the job openings we have. And DeLay and Santorum would tell them which former Republican staff members would be appropriate hires for those jobs. So they were making sure that only Republicans got the trade association and lobbying jobs, and the reason for that was to make sure that then when those trade associations and lobbyists were giving out money, they would only give to Republicans. So the point was to make sure that the well was dry for Democrats. Another way that they did this was Tom DeLay actually kept a book on his desk, and this is true. He kept a book of everybody's campaign contributions, and members would, lobbyists would come in and say, well, here, this is what I want, this is what my business needs, and Tom DeLay would open that book and look in it and say, well, this is how much money you gave us, and this is how much you gave the Democrats. What is it you wanted again? And so it was basically, you know, institutionalized extortion.
Yeah. Duke Cunningham got sent to prison for doing it out in the open. And here Tommy's doing it just a little bit differently. There's not a whole lot of difference, in my opinion.
There's not a whole lot of difference. The reason that DeLay was able to get away with it for so long and Cunningham wasn't is that Cunningham pocketed the money. And the Justice Department has historically been quick to go after members of Congress who take bribes into their personal pockets, but loath to go after members who extort money for campaign contributions. Well, that's really changed in the last couple of years. We now see justice willing to say, no, you know, you can be involved in extortion and bribery over campaign contributions. And that was always the law, that they could go after them, but they really didn't. But I think it's largely because the ethics committees in the House and Senate have been basically dead, that they've taken no action on their own, and they have let more and more outrageous conduct occur without taking any action against members, that justice finally felt the need to step in and say, you know what, this is too much, this is illegal behavior, and we're going to stop it.
Well, these committees didn't do anything because they were under the direct control of Tom DeLay, were they not?
Well, they were, but I will say that the House and the Senate Ethics Committees, these are the only committees in Congress that are evenly split, 5-5, 5-5 in the House, 4-4 in the Senate. So it's an even split between Democrats and Republicans. I can't give Democrats a lot of credit for how they've handled the Ethics Committee there, especially in the House, where there's been a truce for the past 9 years where members have agreed not to file complaints against each other. My group, Crew, had an ethics complaint ready against Tom DeLay and couldn't find anyone to file it for the longest time. And then we were able to work with Representative Chris Bell, a former representative from Texas, and he was willing to file the complaint against DeLay back in June of 2004, only because he was leaving. He had been redistricted by Tom DeLay, and he was out. And so he filed that complaint, but he did it against the wishes of the Democratic leadership. And he was fairly well ostracized by the Democrats for filing that complaint.
And so even the Democrats were intimidated by DeLay to file any charges against him.
Well, I think so. But they also, you know, were, I think, afraid that people might file, Republicans might file ethics complaints against Democrats. You know, my own view is let the chips fall where they may. If you're behaving unethically, you don't deserve to be there. But by no stretch of the imagination was any Democrat doing what Tom DeLay was doing. His level of the kind of conduct he engaged in, you know, there really aren't too many members in history who behaved like Tom DeLay did.
Well, that saddens me that Democrats wouldn't take the bull by the horns because they were afraid it would come back across the aisle at them. That really does sadden me. And I agree with you. Do let the chips fall where they may. I don't care whether a scoundrel is a Democrat or Republican. He should go.
That's exactly right, and I wish the Democrats seem to feel more like that. They are still abiding by this ethics truce. They're still not filing any ethics complaints, even though there are many members of Congress with serious ethics problems, even after DeLay. The next one you'll end up seeing indicted, probably Bob Ney from Ohio, will be indicted in the not-too-distant future. He's been named as a representative involved in illegal behavior in both the Tony Rudy plea that came out on Friday and previously in the Michael Scanlon plea and in the Jack Abramoff plea. So that's another member, and yet we've had an ethics complaint ready to go against Ney for about the past year, and no one would file that either.
What is the buzz in Washington right now about the Jack Abramoff scandal? Do you think it's going to get DeLay personally?
I absolutely think it's going to get DeLay personally, and I think we saw that when we saw the Tony Rudy plea come out on Friday. In addition, you know, Tony Rudy is DeLay's former deputy chief of staff, and for the first time we saw DeLay named in a plea agreement. In Rudy's plea, he's referred to as Representative 2, Bob Ney being Representative 1, and though it's not charged that he was actively engaged in wrongdoing, it does say that DeLay, that Tony Rudy was engaged in criminal activity while in DeLay's office. It also suggests that another top DeLay aide, Edwin Buckham, who I feel confident will be also indicted in the near future, was also involved in that criminal activity. And once you have Tony Rudy and Edwin Buckham and also former press secretary Michael Scanlon, who pled guilty last year, when you have all of those members, all of those staff members for one member of Congress pleading guilty to criminal activity, some of which they were involved in while they were in that member's office, well, there's just no way that Tom DeLay wasn't well aware of, you know, and in on whatever was going on. I mean, he was one of, you know, what I will give him credit for is being a very smart man and a brilliant politician, and he ruled the House with an iron fist. I mean, that's why he's known as the Hammer. So for him to claim at this point that he had no idea what all of these, you know, staff members were doing in his office, that's just frankly not credible.
Certainly not. where there's smoke and there seems to be a lot of smoke coming out of that office. I do fervently hope that we can get all this corruption out of the people's house. It just doesn't. It leads to this apathy that takes place in the country right now. When it comes time to vote, you know, so many of the people stay home. Say, oh, it doesn't matter anymore. They're all crooks, and it's not fair because they're not all crooks. And, you know, thank God for organizations like yours that that puts the heat on some of these people and keeps the feet to the fire. You mentioned that you've got a complaint to file against somebody?
Yeah, against Bob Ney, the representative from Ohio, who I believe will get indicted in the near future. Bob Ney was very closely involved with Jack Abramoff. Some of the things that he did, one of the things he did was he went on a trip to Scotland on a private jet to go play golf at St. Andrews with Jack Abramoff. But the most offensive thing he did was that he agreed to, Jack Abramoff asked him on behalf of one of Abramoff's Indian tribal clients at a casino, the Tigua tribe. First, let me tell you that the Tigua tribe in Texas, Abramoff helped close down their casino, working with Michael Scanlon and former Christian Coalition leader Ralph Reed, closed the casino, then got the Tigua to hire him to reopen the casino, and then he paid Bob Ney $32,000 to push legislation to reopen the Tigua's casino, which Bob Ney never was able to do. But that's just an example of the kind of conduct Ney was involved in, and that's where you got a direct exchange of campaign contributions, $32,000 in return for a promise of legislative assistance, and that's a bribe, that's illegal. Bob Ney's going to get indicted for it.
What do you think about this new ethics bill that's coming up? I haven't read the whole thing, but I see the lobbyists are restricted to only being able to pay $50 for one of the congressman's meals from now on. Is this whole thing just a joke?
It is absolutely just a joke. You know, none of the kinds of reforms that are being batted about in Congress are serious. And you have to fault the Democrats as well as the Republicans again here for not coming up with serious reform. The fact is, neither party really wants lobbying and ethics reform because they don't want to give up the perks of their position. So they're not anxious to see this. But what they are anxious to do is go home in the fall and tell voters, yeah, we voted for lobbying reform, we voted for ethics reform, without ever having to suffer the pain of what those reforms would really mean. So I think that the bills that they're talking about now and the bill that just passed the Senate, they wouldn't have had any impact at all on the Abramoff scandal, and they won't prevent future corruption scandals. Neither in the Senate or the House do the bills have any kind of oversight or enforcement mechanism. And the fact is, there were all sorts of rules already that banned the kind of activity that DeLay was engaged in and Abramoff was engaged in, but there's no enforcement of those rules. So if you're not going to enforce the old rules, what's the point of coming up with new rules if you're not going to give them any more teeth than the old rules?
Sure. And I agree with you. I think this this bill is a sham, and they do exactly what you said, is go back home and brag that they helped pass new ethics reform bills when it's just a hollow bill. There's nothing to it. We are so glad to that you could be with us today, Melanie. You've explained a lot to the folks, and I hope you will continue on with the great job you folks have been doing to keep these people's feet to the fire. If we're ever going to have confidence in our government again, we need many watchdog groups like yours, and we need to be informed by groups like yours so that the public knows what's going on. You perform an invaluable service, and I thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for the kind words, and we'll keep at it. You know, DeLay was just—he was the tip of the iceberg, and there are others to come.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Bye bye.
Yeah, bye now. You know, there's some sobering words right there. I read part of this new ethics bill that they're going to pass, and it's a joke. It is a joke. These guys, it's no wonder they fight tooth and nail for campaign money to stay in office. It's no wonder. Imagine that. I don't know what kind of money you make, but I know what's in our little family treasury, and it's not all that much. And these bastards are limited to $50 per meal, and they're telling their constituency, see, we're limited. We're limited now. We can only take $50 per meal from the. Hey, I know it's Washington, D.C. It's not like I haven't been to Washington, D.C. and eaten in some of the finest restaurants in Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is no more expensive than New York City or the best restaurants in Atlanta or Miami or any place else. It just isn't so. And if you can't get by on $25 for a meal, there's something wrong. There's just something wrong. You don't have to go eat at Ruth Chris Steakhouse every day. You don't have to go eat at, it's not open anymore, but Jack Abramoff's restaurant where he was conning people. It's absurd. It's absurd. I know people that don't spend over $50 a week for a couple of kids and their family. There's people out here eating a hell of a lot of macaroni and cheese. There's people out here eating the cheapest bologna they can find because they don't have money, because they don't have a decent job, because their jobs are leaving this country by the boatload, because of NAFTA, because of some of the legislation these greedy bastards have pulled over the eyes of the American public. There's people out here scrimping to feed their family every day, and they're complaining that they're limited to $50 for a meal. That's obscene. It's absolutely obscene. And I know the party people hate to hear say it. I don't care if it's Republicans or Democrats. Somebody in the Democratic Party should go on record and tell it like it is, that it doesn't need to be this way, and it should fight this thing. If you know of a Democratic congressman who shares our views on this new ethics bill, let us know. We'll get in contact with them and try and get them on the program. But believe me, you know, we get anybody that does a program like this or some of the big program, you get people approaching you all the time that want to be to beat their own drum, to promote whatever issue it is that's facing them at the moment. There isn't anybody wanting to talk about that. There isn't anybody wanting to talk about that at all, and I understand why. It's a joke. And Democrats, as well as Republicans, are going to go home after it's passed and they're going to say, see, I did good. I did the best I could, and I voted for this new ethics package. It's a whitewash. Get a hold of a copy of it. I don't have the number of it right now. I'll try and look that up and maybe have it for you tomorrow. But it's a sham. It's a diversion. And Democrats and Republicans, and I'm so sorry to say that Democrats are involved in it too, just to get the heat off of them. Because they love those perks. Oh, they love those perks. And when you're there and you walk the halls of Congress, you can understand why they want to stay there. The power is most definitely an aphrodisiac for these people. There isn't any question about it. I know the founders of this country had nothing like that in mind. You know it, I know it, they know it, but they don't give a damn. Something's got to be done. And the DNC, the party people, they don't like to hear you talk about the Democrats. They want us to think of, well, it's those nasty Republicans that are responsible for all the ills and all the unethical things going on in Washington, and it's not true. If the Democrats were serious about truly, truly doing something about ethics reform, they would stand up and do it, but you don't see them doing it, do you? No, because they don't want it. They want those perks. They want as much as they can get. And they'll keep getting it, and they'll keep taking it, and they'll keep being influenced by these lobbyists as long as they can get away with it. They will. You're listening to The Guy James Show. We're going to pause for the news in a moment or so. And we hope you'll be with us when we come back. So don't go away. Again, this is The Guy James Show. We'll be back right after the news.
my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, now, that was a short 5 minutes, wasn't it? Little gremlins in the system today. No news. Don't know what happened to it. Just disappeared someplace. So it goes off into cyberspace, as things like that often do. I guess you were probably just going to go out and get a beer anyway, weren't you? Probably so. Hey, glad to have you along today. We're dedicating this program today to the bug man, Mr. Tom DeLay, and we've heard a lot about him so far. One of the most interesting things that I've seen come up about this DeLay mess and this Jack Abramoff mess is now that some of them are trying to make it seem like it's an anti-Semitic thing with Abramoff. That's right. This Powerline, this right-wing website, says, I have a conflict of interest, and such conflicts arising from one's political or moral value system can be more powerful than conflicts that arise from the scent of money. Said, I wish Abramoff's tormentors would be similarly honest. Let them admit their own wish to see the political consequences of the Abramoff affair that they, simulating disinterest, now predict, like, for example, the implosion of the Jewish-Christian alliance and the fall from Tom DeLay. In considering the unfolding of Abramoff's fate, it's hard to avoid the conclusion that he's been singled out. This is Jack Abramoff they're talking about. It's hard to avoid the conclusion that he's been singled out because, as a Washington Post writer with a Jewish name snidely said of him, he's an Orthodox Jew who seems to flaunt his piety the way other lobbyists flashed their Rolexes. Another Jew who delighted in Abramoff's downfall, Frank Rich of the New York Times, referred to this Orthodox Jew who in his salad days wore a yarmulke to press interviews. If Abramoff were a secular Jew who directed streams of money to left-wing candidates, to liberal think tanks, to charitable causes like Planned Parenthood and PETA, do you think we would ever have heard his name? I don't. Oh, my God. Now, that's quite a statement. It really is. They're picking on poor old Jack Abramoff because he's Jewish. The left's anti-Semitic right now. Oh. Man, you talk about grasping at straws. That is really grasping. 866-546-5254. We'd love to hear from you on the program this afternoon. 866-546-5254. In this discussion about Tom DeLay, I should add that I don't come to the conclusion that Tom DeLay is evil. I don't come to that conclusion lightly. I really think that most politicians, regardless of party or philosophy, are genuinely concerned with the public interest. Most. That's not to say some aren't vile and others are maybe foolish and misguided or hypocritical, but that doesn't make them evil. DeLay is not misguided or foolish. All along, he's acted deliberately to aggrandize his power at the expense of this entire country. He's one of the few politicians I would call evil. And I make that statement only with the full awareness of its gravity. You know, in DeLay's world, the ends justify the means. In DeLay's world, victory is proof of rightness. In DeLay's world, substantive compromise is a sign of weakness. You know, Jimmy Hoffa would be proud of this guy. DeLay and his ilk have no place in the government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And the damage that he has wrought in the last few years is extremely serious. But more to the point, He could not have acted alone. Others enabled and tolerated his abuse of power. Nay, they encouraged it. He's had plenty of encouragement from this White House. Plenty. They've worked in lockstep, arm in arm, all the way. But more to the point, he couldn't have acted alone. And others did enable and tolerate his abuse of power and the damage that was caused, all in the pursuit of victory at any cost. For that, all of the Republican leadership needs to share the blame. And as for his work with foster children, going to church once a week does not excuse malevolent activity the rest of the time. Certainly not. And I will. I'll go on record right now, and I predict that he's going to hit the evangelical Christian speaking tour as soon as possible. He'll get a buck out of this. You wait and see. It just makes him more of a martyr in their eyes, and he can have his speaking schedule fully booked from the time he leaves offices until he goes to prison, if that ever happens, and then from the moment he gets out of prison. You mark my word. You mark my word. To the Tom DeLays, the Pat Robertsons, the James Dobsons, to those charlatans, Tom DeLay will be a martyr, a hero, the rest of his life. Even if he goes to prison, he will be a hero when he gets out. These people will embrace him like never before. Let's face it, he's one of them. Guys like Falwell and Dobson and Robertson, they've been pulling the wool over people's eyes for years and years and years for money. Tom DeLay's been doing the same thing, only he's been doing it for power. Of course, power begets money, so Tom's lived fairly well over the years. He's lived very well over the years, all these little perks that he's gotten. Hey, I wonder, just to change the subject just a little bit, talking about nasty people, I read one of my favorite newspapers, it used to be anyway, the Cleveland Plain Dealer. I used to live in Ohio, and the Plain Dealer used to have a great reputation for investigative reporting. They broke many, many, many great big stories over the years, and they had a crack investigative reporting outfit up there. And they kept everybody in Ohio on their toes. They broke a lot of national stories as well. But they are reporting that Ken Blackwell, Secretary of State of Ohio, that man that pushed the Diebold voting machines in Ohio, the guy that, as far as I'm concerned, threw the election towards George W. Bush in this last election. There's no doubt in my mind that he did that now. He made an embarrassing announcement Monday. You won't believe this if you haven't heard it. He accidentally bought stock in Diebold, a voting machine maker that benefited from decisions made by his own office. In a required filing with the Ohio Ethics Commission, the GOP gubernatorial hopeful said his hefty portfolio included 178 shares of Diebold stock, which sold for a loss. And to quote him, he said, "While I was unaware of this stock in my portfolio, its mere presence may be viewed as a conflict." Well, shazam, you don't think. Huh. Blackwell wrote that in a letter that accompanied his annual financial disclosure statement, and the Blackwell camp attempts to downplay the controversy, and of course rivals from both parties. He's in a fight for his political life now in a primary there. People in his own party are after him on this. Blackwell has a pretty unique history with this company, said Bob Petacek, spokesman for Attorney General Jim Petro, who's also seeking the GOP nomination for governor. This should be investigated. Now, that sounds like a typical primary attack, doesn't it? They'll attack, but they won't say anything too bad in case they have to back this guy for governor a little later on. And Blackwell spokesman Carlo Lopero called the request for an investigation absurd and said the county boards of election determine which machines to use. Well, maybe. And in his duties as Secretary of State, Blackwell's staff narrowed the list of companies eligible to replace Ohio's antiquated voting equipment with more modern technology. The Green-based Diebold made the cut, and a rival firm accused Blackwell of improperly favoring the Ohio company. And Diebold also drew the ire of critics after then-CEO Wally O'Dell sent a fundraising letter in which he committed to deliver Ohio's electoral votes to President Bush in 2004. Now, here we have the Secretary of State now running for governor. If he should get it, we'd have one corrupt governor replacing a convicted corrupt governor in Ohio. Ooh, what a cesspool Ohio politics have become lately. Can you may say Mr. Noe, head of the Rare Coin Fund there, scammed Ohio out of a pile of money. But here we have this this Blackwell, this con man, this man that delivered the election to George W. Bush on a silver platter with the help of Diebold's CEO, who promised to commit to deliver Ohio's electoral votes to President Bush. So he promises that, and Blackwell makes sure he gets the contract for the voting machines. And according to Blackwell's letter, he does not approve individual stock selections, but has instructed his money manager to avoid all conflicts of interest. Is he trying to tell us that a money manager for him wouldn't know that they ought to stay away from Diebold stock? Is he serious? He's trying to convince us of that? He's quoted as saying those instructions were not followed by the new financial manager that took over the account last year. On Saturday, while reviewing his annual ethics filing, Blackwell said he learned that he owned the remaining 83 shares and also sold them for a loss. Ohio Democratic Party spokesman Brian Rothenberg could hardly contain his glee. Well, I suppose, he said, if Ken Blackwell didn't know how his own money was being spent, why would the people of Ohio think he'd be a good steward of their checkbook? Oh, man. Ohio politics is really something else these days. It really is. It's amazing that it's turned that bad. It doesn't look real good for Blackwell right now. First, the story came out about Reverend Rod Parcell toting him around on his church's jet airplane. And believe me, if you want to see a certified nut as an evangelical preacher, Rod Parcell's your man. He's crazy. Something is some screws loose in that boy's skull, let me tell you. So he wants to be in good with the future governor, he thinks, and he thinks he'll get him elected. And who knows, maybe they will. But Blackwell's trailing in the polls right now. And to Petro and his own party for the primary election. And that's a good thing. Thank God. Thank God that's a good thing. So it's not looking very promising for Ken Blackwell right now. But, man, I'll tell you, things in Ohio, what a mess. What an ugly mess. We've got Bob Taft up there, which has been, he's either the dumbest governor there's ever been of Ohio or the most corrupt. I'm not sure which exactly. But, you know, he got fined and convicted. And here we got Blackwell up to his ears in his Diebold mess. I don't know. Kind of smells, don't you think? We're going to go to the phones. We got Dave from California. Hi, Dave.
One of your biggest fans, Guy. You do make me think, and you do call it like it is. You're making me wonder today what percentage of our Congress, our government, really, is ethical, is honest. It sounds like an awfully lot of them have their hand out to whatever special interests are willing to pay them. You know, we have our frists and hazards and delays and Binney. And the parties elected them to be their leader. They're in effect saying, help us to steal more, Bennett Hazard.
Dave, you've hit upon something there. You know, let's you and me go to Washington. Let's conduct a survey. We've got to get somebody to put up the money, but we'll go to all 535 House members and Senate senators, all 535 of them. And let's see, how much money would it take? Let's offer them each $100,000, okay? We'll have a private meeting with each one of them and offer them $100,000. And don't worry, Mr. Congressman, Mr. Senator, no one's going to find out. And all you got to do is help me out on a vote. I wonder what percentage. What do you think, Dave?
Well, I'm afraid, you know, I think...
$100,000 cash laying right on the desk right there, $100 bills.
There's a Dennis Kucinich, there's a Bernie Sanders, there's a Conyers, there's a Woolsey. There's some that I think will be driven more by principle and wouldn't do that.
You're right. There's some damn good men there and women.
My own congressman here in the 1st District of California, if the bankruptcy people offer him enough, they've got his vote. And I guess a lot of the Democrats, they'll go over if they're offered enough. And I dare say it would be less than $100,000 on a nice, clean envelope, they'd say.
Oh, you mean $10,000?
Probably.
Don't you hate to think that you could buy a congressman for $10,000?
Well, I think what had been the MO of, say, Tom DeLay for so much is to go to big corporations and say, this is going to be very lucrative for both of us. You're going to provide me with $10 million, and I'm going to give you $100 million in the Treasury funds on some no-bid contract that you really won't have to do anything to earn it. And that's the kind of thing that's been going on. It's why our Treasury is in the shape that it is right now. That's the way I'm seeing it.
Well, a lot of them must be aware that it's easy to get money. That Duke Cunningham thing, that couldn't have been done without other people knowing. It just couldn't. I heard today that he actually had it printed on the back of his business cards. This blows me away. He actually had it printed on the back of his business cards. He didn't write it on. He had it printed on when he had the cards printed that if you donated a certain amount to him, you could get this certain amount of a contract. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. I heard somebody discussing that today, swearing it was true. If Cunningham was taking that kind of money and the people that saw his lifestyle, they had to think something was, his fellow congressman had to think something was up, didn't they?
Yeah. I suppose throughout history we have had some of the finest politicians that money can buy, but I don't think it's ever been as bad as it is now. To look at what's happening now, it is strictly just graft-driven greed everywhere.
Well, we've got, as our guest just said a few moments ago, we've got an ethics committee there that basically has been neutered. They're not doing anything to anybody.
I know, and I guess I'm hearing a mutual agreement. We won't complain about you guys, and you don't complain about us.
Yeah.
But I think if one of them had the courage to do it, you know, maybe they would take out all the riffraff on both sides. You know, I don't think that one would go down gracefully if he had the goods on the other side.
Wouldn't it be great? You know, we had this gang of 13 a while back. Wouldn't it be great if somebody formed a gang of guys with white hats in the Congress that they knew they were all clean and they lowered the boom on the rest of them? It would be great if a Kucinich or somebody got up a group like that and decided to clean the place up themselves.
Well, it would be the hope for this country because it's so bad right now. I mean, I see us headed rapidly for bankruptcy, just shifting so much wealth into these special interests.
Well, that, and we're borrowing $3 billion a day right now. $3 billion a day.
Is that much? My heaven.
Yeah, that comes up to 12 bucks a piece. Around 12 bucks a piece for every man, woman, and child in the United States. Is that right? Have I got that right? Yeah, 12 bucks a piece.
Per day.
That's just hard to fathom. It really is.
I don't want to think it, but I wonder if it's possible to save this country if it's not already too badly damaged.
Well, you know, Dave, I agree with your sentiments there. I've said for a while now that I think this coming midterm for control of the Congress, this might be the moment in time for the United States of America. This might be the time.
Have you come up with a guest yet that's going to tell us how we're going to deal with this crooked voting machines problem, because that's going to be, they'll use that as much as they want to or have to or need to, just hang on to, they don't want to give up their power, you know.
Well, you know, the problem with that is, Dave, that there is no one that I can find. I mean, I know there are a lot of allegations out there, and I'm a black and white kind of guy. There's no one out there that can lay down in front of me absolute, incontrovertible, no argument proof. No, not based on conjecture, not based on hearsay or anything else, that lays down a document in front of me and says, this is absolute documented proof that these machines were rigged.
Well, you get one here that'll come as close as anybody you'll ever meet, because the GOP had the system designed that can be entered by modem, and that leaves no record of what has happened. Now, you ask, why did they do that? Dennis Hastert blocks all efforts to bring bills to the floor that would make these machines honest. Why do you think they're doing that? You know, in every place where they have both exit polls and the results of the voting machines, there's a great discrepancy between the two, and it all goes to the GOP. They did that, professors of mathematics did that, in all the areas that used the Diebold machine and that had exit polls. 9 million votes switched from Bush to...
Oh, yeah. That's...
I'm coming close to giving you what I believe is irrefutable, uncontributable proof.
Just want it. I just want it to be airtight. I want it to be airtight. It says here is the smoking gun. Something that any jury in America could look at and say, "Hey, this is a slam dunk." And I know that's tough. Hey, Dave, I got to move on. We're gonna continue on with that search. And
thank you. And
I know you'll keep my feet to the fire on that.
Brad Friedman, Bev Harris, the two really good ones.
Yeah. Okay, Dave. Hey, thanks. Thanks for your call. I'm one of those people. I'm a doubter. I am. I'm one of these. I'm a cynic. You gotta really nail it down for me before I'll really take it to the bank. And so far, who knows? We're gonna move on to Michelle in Cypress, California. Is that right, Cypress, California, Michelle?
Yes, it is, Guy. I'm so glad to hear your voice again.
Well, it's nice to have you on the line with us today.
Well, you know, I hadn't been able to listen to your show in quite a while, and glad to get it via the Internet. A voice of reason is so appreciated. I called because, I've heard Dave before. He's very intelligent, and his perspective, you know, you guys were talking about the congressmen and our representatives going after them, offering them, and, you know, what could we get them to do if we offered them some money, all the money we donate to so many different grassroots organizations in the fight. But I would suggest to everyone, if possible, that they get the movie The Corporation. I think if we as citizens truly understand this propaganda that, you know, the poor corporations, they have truly came in, they utilize pretty much all of our natural resources, and they've moved on to cheaper and greener pastures, I guess you would say, and we're paying for it. We subsidize corporations. Our children subsidize them in their propaganda they put out to our children to buy their toys. And, you know, it's not so much that I wouldn't want children to have toys and that I don't want companies to make toys. It's more, like I said, if everyone kind of watched this movie, The Corporation, they'd understand where I'm coming from, that we can't be led to believe that these people in control of these mega, industries, which are few, to be in control of us, and which they are, and our government.
Right.
What do you think, Guy?
Well, I, I'm really disappointed right now. I'm happy today because we've at least gotten one of the rats out of the barn here. But he hadn't left yet. I guess I shouldn't get too happy over it. But you know, who knows? He might make a sudden recovery here. But I want to think that a good percentage of these people are honest and trustworthy and are looking out for the American public all the time. But lately, you know, this ethics bill that's come up right now, it kind of dispels any notion I had that most of them are honest and ethical. And that hurts when you know, we're talking that way about our government. I know we all want to think our own senator and our own representative are honest and ethical and upstanding, but it's not true. There's some of them that are not, and I wish there were a way. Again, like I mentioned to Dave, I wish there were a group of these guys that were squeaky clean would get together and get a committee up and go after the rest of them, just expose them.
And that's why I brought up the corporation. If you think about it, what did I would say to a friend, you know, don't sell your soul to the devil. To be a politician, you know, which I don't understand this, the public owns the airwaves, why politicians have to pay so much, why we have that whole bull. If you think about how much money they have to invest and who they have to do favors for and what the repercussions are to stand up against. Look at Tom Daschle. I mean, you know, it's been suggested that, you know, his office had anthrax. I mean, what was he doing prior to that? And it wasn't suggested he did have anthrax in his office. But, you know, there's threats out there, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm just saying the threats are led by financial gains of others, or the promises are by financial gains of others, not to the mass, not to the society, but the very few. And we've got a media that's the very few that doesn't tell the public, you know. So, but anyway, Guy, you got to go online and look for the corporation, and maybe you can watch it.
Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to.
It's a very good documentary. I saw it on Sundance, and I'm going to get it and have a house party and enlighten some people behind the Orange County, because Orange Curtain, I live in Orange County, California. We call it the behind the Orange Curtain.
Well,
thank you for the voice out there.
Well, thank you. Thank you for listening. We appreciate all of our listeners. Thank you so much.
Okay. Take care, Guy.
Oh, gosh, it's one of those things, you know, I do hate to sit around and wonder if our congresspeople or our congress critters are honest and ethical. I know some that are. I'm absolutely convinced that, you know, my man Dennis Kucinich, I'm absolutely convinced Dennis Kucinich is as honest and forthright as someone could be. If I ever found out that he wasn't, I guess I'd lose 100% of the faith I have in things ever being right and proper in the Congress. I really would. Hey, we're going to take a little break, and we're going to be right back after this, so don't go away.
We're not going to play around. We do have your phone. And if you say anything untoward, obscene, or anything like that, we'll contact your local authorities, and you will be held accountable.
What, you ill-mannered sack of crap?
Tell us what you think. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
What do you think tribal sovereignty means in the 21st century? And how do we resolve conflicts between tribes and the federal and state governments?
Yeah. Tribal sovereignty means that. It's sovereign. It's, you've been given sovereignty and you're viewed as a sovereign entity. And therefore, the relationship between the federal government and tribes is one between sovereign entities.
What are you, on dope?
We think so, too. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
Oh, man. You'd never prove to me that he wasn't on dope when he said that or something. You couldn't be sober and say a statement like that, could you? Could you, really? Oh, man. Does it not embarrass you when you hear something like that coming out of the mouth of the president of the United States, Mr. Pretzel himself? Oh, I tell you. Hey, we'll get off the Tom DeLay thing for just a moment. Let's turn from one idiot to another. I guess I shouldn't call him an idiot. He's a smart man. He had to be smart to get away with everything he's gotten away with. But the chickens are coming home to roost, hopefully. It seems Catherine Harris... You know, here I am in Florida, and I know the powers that be, the Democratic Party in Florida, they hate to hear me say this, and I don't care. From all the help our show's ever gotten from the Florida Democratic Party based up in Tallahassee, I'm not talking about the local clubs. The local clubs have been doggone good to the Guy James Show. But the state party, nothing. They're worth nothing. They're worth nothing at all. And, they love it when I say that. But they hate it when I talk about our senator here. And some of my friends don't like it either when I talk about him. But I think Bill Nelson is one of these guys. There's no question in my mind. He's one of these dominionists. He scares me. He votes with the Republicans half the time. But don't you pity me. I'm in a state where I got a choice between him and Catherine Harris as a United States senator. My God, is there any place in the country that's got a worse choice than that? And so I have to just eat it and pull the lever for him? Ooh. I may just lay off that one. My conscience bothers me when I have to pick the lesser of, you know, what I was going to say. But it seems to me, it seems that Catherine Harris is... competing with that, that insane woman up in Cincinnati, Jean Schmidt, Congressman Jean Schmidt of Ohio, to see who's the craziest. Did you see Catherine Harris's interview with the Hannity recently? Didn't you think she acted like she had some screws loose? This coming from the Tampa Tribune, changing locks on her campaign headquarters and accusing her staff of disloyalty and her own party of spying on her are signs of erratic behavior that some Catherine Harris staff members saying has worsened since her father's death. Harris is restaffing her campaign and will announce new key staff members today, a campaign spokesman said Monday. But in the past 10 days, Catherine Harris has had locks changed and posted a security guard at the door of her campaign headquarters in Tampa and had former staff members escorted in to retrieve their belongings. They're out to get me. And she also told a gathering of supporters in Cocoa Beach on Saturday that the Republican Party had, quote, infiltrated her campaign to put knives in my back. You better look over your shoulder, Catherine. And C told a reporter that a longtime trusted political advisor had leaked a story about her staff members quitting, then called back to retract the comments. And D announced hiring her new staff without identifying them. Does that mean she really hadn't found them? Wonder what that job pays. I could give her some advice. I promise now I wouldn't get elected, but it probably be a pretty good... I can't think of Ed's name. Can't think of her name. Worked for that little Texan for a while. Ross Perot. Ed. Anyway, he was working with him. He got out of there. He knew better. Former campaign manager Jim Dornan, who left in November, called the most recent events in the campaign unbelievable. And this was all in the paper with this goofy-looking picture of Catherine Harris, but then I guess I've never seen a picture of Catherine Harris where it's got a she's at a table, obviously in a restaurant or someplace, and she's been speaking to a crowd of people, and all of these people are they've all got this stoned look on their faces, like, you know, not a smile, a grin, nothing, just cold-looking group, and she's got this weird-looking. I wish you could see this picture. Interesting. And I don't know, this story that I wanted to bring up kind of hits home a little bit. We have a family member in the family who retired from Delphi. And we all heard the story about Delphi having to file bankruptcy. And if Delphi has to file bankruptcy and is not able to supply General Motors, even General Motors, which is really hard to believe, General Motors might have to file bankruptcy. And so, you know, there's a family member, like I said, that recently retired from there. And Delphi is giving everybody the poor mouth, you know. Oh, gee, times are tough. And then I find this story in the Austin American Statesman from Austin, Texas. Cutting U.S. jobs while prospering in China. A struggling U.S. auto parts maker faces a dilemma that's increasingly common as more products are made in China. It's a tale of two countries and one company. Delphi Corporation, the world's second largest auto parts manufacturer, is struggling in the United States. Once worth more than $17 billion and with sales of $19 billion in North America in 2004, Delphi filed for bankruptcy protection of its U.S. operations in October, citing tens of millions of dollars in losses every month. In the bankruptcy filing, the company said a substantial segment of its U.S. manufacturing base would be sold or closed over the next 2 years. The company had asked workers to take pay cuts of up to 60% and accept reduced benefits. However, and this is a big but or high, however, whichever word you like to use, in China, Delphi is profitable and growing. From 9 employees and $20 million in revenue a decade ago, Delphi China now employs more than 8,000 people and sold $637 million worth of automobile parts in 2004, which is the latest available figure. I think we knew somebody that went to China for Delphi and worked over there when they were just getting started and complained about how cold it was in the plants and how rotten the conditions were. But gee, they found a way to turn a profit there, haven't they? And all executives, although the executives declined to comment on how profitable the operation is, revenue in the Asia-Pacific region grew 30% between 2002 and 2004 and has since been growing and profitable, said Steve Clemens, a company spokesman. The contrast of the struggling U.S. parent and its thriving Chinese offspring, which is not affected... The Chinese offspring not affected by the bankruptcy proceeding. See, this is their ace in the hole here. Their ace in the hole. It underscores the difficulties that manufacturing plants in America face as competition from low-wage nations such as China and India increases. Now, I find this interesting that Delphi in America, biggest competition, is Delphi in China. Have you caught on to that? And so the people that are driving Delphi America into bankruptcy is Delphi in China. Is this by design? Hell yes, it's by design. Of course it is. The average Chinese worker makes $3,500 a year. And that includes company payments to a government-run benefits program. While starting engineers earn about $7,300 a year with benefits. Delphi's U.S. operation is burdened by the cost of pension and health care, promises made to employees in the past. If you can't keep your promises, don't make them. I hate the fact that every time I see one of these companies saying, oh, we can't pay this, we can't pay. Well, you agreed to it, didn't you? Didn't you? And I know there's a lot of ways to look at this, but during the heydays of the American automotive companies, and the United Auto Workers would say that they'd pick one of them, you know, they'd pick one of them every year, to every contract time to strike. And if things were going good and sales were going good, the automotive companies, we'll pay, we'll give you whatever you want. Whatever. We'll sign it. We'll give it to you. But just keep those assembly lines rolling, because we're making more money than we know what to do with. That's how it was. So I don't want to see these big auto companies. I don't want to see General Motors. I don't want to see Delphi placing the blame on this to the unions. And, oh, yes, the unions have culpability in this. Perhaps they got a little too greedy. But the companies agreed to everything. They agreed to pay the benefits. They agreed to pay the incentives. They agreed to pay the insurance. They agreed to pay the pensions. And so they go over and they start a division in China. Obviously not monetarily hooked up to the one in America. And they create competition for themselves, drive themselves out of business in the U.S. so they don't have to pay the pensions. Now you tell me, what gives here? And why are they allowed to get away with this? Something smells terrible here. Terrible. You know, the Chinese manufacturers, they call all the benefits and everything that you have to pay when somebody retires legacy costs. The Chinese manufacturers have no legacy cost at all. So here we are in China. They're years ahead of the curve. The same curve that the American auto workers were involved in back at the times when the unions were forming and trying to get some rights and benefits from the robber baron auto companies that paid them nothing. And they got to where they could make a decent living and so forth. And they got the benefits and they got the insurance and they got the pension. And now the company's saying they don't want to pay them. They can't pay them. And we know, it's just human nature, that someday the Chinese are going to be faced with the same thing. Someday, when the people over there figure out that they don't want to be run with an iron fist by the Communist Party anymore, and they will figure that out, they'll get their freedom, they'll get their democracy, and they'll go on strike for higher wages and benefits. They will. You know they will. And then the price of their wages will go up. And where are they going to send the auto workers to? When are they going to send the work to then? What company will be the poorest? And there's still some African companies. Will they build plants in Uganda or Sierra Leone? Will they build plants like that and start paying them $1 an hour or $2 or whatever? Will the United States by that time be so poor, because of all the jobs leaving this country, that the circle will be complete and the jobs will come back here because we have the cheapest labor in the world? I wonder. But I sure do resent a company like Delphi trying to blame everything on the workers, blame everything on the unions. And to be sure, the workers and the unions bear some responsibility in this. But don't agree to deals you can't keep. Just don't do it. And they did. And if they bail out on these pensions here in this country and are making a huge profit overseas, it's not right. And it should not be allowed. I don't know what can be done about it, but it should not be allowed. It's wrong. Looking at other things in the news, we have this story in the UK Independent. about the U.S. propaganda machine. And they were churning out, oh, what a lovely war. A company here in this country called the Lincoln Group. Obviously some Bush cronies. The Lincoln Group was tasked with presenting the U.S. version of events in Iraq to counter adverse media coverage. Here we present examples of its work and the reality behind the headlines. It's the news. What happened was this Lincoln Group put out the news in Iraq, which is the news according to Don Rumsfeld and the Bush administration. A week after the U.S. Defense Secretary criticized the media for exaggerating reports of violence in Iraq, the Independent, and this newspaper in the U.K., has obtained examples of newspaper reports the Bush administration want Iraqis to read. These news reports were prepared by specially trained American PSYOPs troops who paid thousands of dollars to Iraqi newspaper editors to run these unattributed reports, so they wouldn't know who wrote them, they think the newspaper did, to run those in their publication in order to hide its involvement. The Pentagon hired the Lincoln Group to act as a liaison between troops and journalists. The Lincoln Group was at the center of controversy last year when it was revealed the company was being paid more than $100 million for various contracts, including the planting of such stories. How's that make you feel? Not only are they propagandizing us with the right-wing controlled media in this country, and we know that they have engaged in that, they're propagandizing the Iraqi people, having this company write good stories to talk about the good news in Iraq, or manufacture good news in Iraq, is what a lot of it's about, and then get those, pay the newspapers over there to put them in. They gave several examples of this here. And, for example, here's a story. The Iraqi army defeats terrorism. That was the headline. The Iraqi army defeats terrorism. This was ran on October the 26th, 2005. Here's the Lincoln version, this company's version. With the people's approval of the Constitution, Iraq is well on its way to forming a permanent government. Meanwhile, the underhanded forces of Al-Qaeda remain bent on halting progress and inciting civil war. The honest citizens of Iraq, however, need not fear these criminals and terrorists. The brave warriors of the Iraqi security forces, the ISF, are hard at work stopping Al-Qaeda's attacks before they occur. This is the planted story, remember. On October 24th, soldiers near Taji received a report that terrorists were stockpiling dangerous weapons. The soldiers found over 150 tank and artillery rounds. These munitions are similar to the ones that Al-Qaeda bomb makers often use to construct their deadly bombs, the IEDs. The troops destroyed every last round, ensuring they will never be used against the Iraqi people. Three Al-Qaeda mercenaries in Baqaba were planned to conduct a suicide vest attack. Officers of the Iraq Police Service, the IPS, spotted them as they drove towards their target, but then something happened. The would-be murderer lost his faith and leapt from the moving vehicle. One of the other suicide bombers panicked and detonated his vest while still inside the car, instantly killing himself and another accomplice. That's the planted story. Now here's the truth. At least five Iraqis killed by suicide bomber on a bus in Baqaba, northeast of Baghdad. Bodies of nine Iraqi border guards who were shot dead were found the previous day. Joint U.S.-Iraqi convoy is targeted by the car bomb in Al Mamun area of Baghdad. So we have this glorious story of how well things are going and how these trained Iraqi soldiers, I guess you'd call them, are protecting people, and then we find out the truth. And there's one story after another, after another, after another in this about stories that the American military paid Iraqi papers, newspapers to do it, and this Lincoln Company paid $100 million by the Pentagon to plant these stories. That's an unusual way of making money, don't you think? But then if you got ties to the Bush administration, I guess anything's possible. Well, we're getting down toward the end of the day here. And I was thinking the other day, so now what? The Republicans have been winning the battle of ideas because the Democrats are being led by such arrogant men as Joe Biden and Joe Lieberman and others. You know what I think of those two Joes. And the Democrats haven't fought back by proposing any kind of a finely tuned alternative vision of a more promising American future. They came out with that plan last week, which was nothing. We're going to do better. That's it. you know, the GOP all along has seized the opportunity and the, I don't know, the clueless and disorganized Democrats have given them one opportunity after another. And America's paying the price. And I'm disgusted with the Democrats because of their irresponsibility. But I fear the GOP because of the predatory ideology that is at the heart of their vision of America, no matter how they try and disguise it with their political rhetoric. You know what they're after. And I see a parallel with the Roman Empire happening here. In its final years, if you know your history, the Romans were racked by terrible internal divisions and external wars. And Cicero wrote, "Anything more corrupt than the men in times of today cannot be conceived." Well, obviously, he didn't have a broad vision. Obviously, he couldn't see what's happening today in our government. He went on to write a letter to Julius Caesar, which said, "The fate of the Republic hangs on the honor and steadfastness of a single man." The question is there a man of steadfastness and honor in the Democratic Party today? And if so, who is that man? Does anybody know? Is there a Democratic leader among us who's risen through the ranks and is willing and capable to seek to capture the hearts and minds of middle America? If so, who is it? Again, the GOP has seized every opportunity the Democrats have given, and America does pay the price one time after another, after another, after another. And oh, sure, family values, personal responsibility, religion, anti-abortion, all of those things sound good, but they're merely a diversion from the real Republican agenda. They're just the talking points used by those in power to further consolidate their influence. Most people would categorically reject the real motives of today's GOP if they weren't so easily fooled by the Republican rhetoric, which sounds so inviting to the average man who chooses his leadership according to whoever has the best sound bites right now. "We're going to cut your taxes. We're going to protect you." You know, all of that. There was an article in Thomas Paine recently which said the share of national income going to wages and salaries. And I want you to remember this when you hear the Bushes talking about how great things are in this country right now. The share of national income going to wages and salaries is at the lowest level since 1929, the year that kicked off the Great Depression. The share going to after-tax corporate profits, which heavily benefit corporate executives and other wealthy Americans through increased dividends and capital gains, is at the highest level since 1929. In 2005, for the first time since the Great Depression, Americans borrowed more than they earned. Parade Magazine reports in What People Earn. Fueled by obscene wage inequality and tax cuts, income and wealth are piling up at the very top, and more jobs are keeping people in poverty instead of out of poverty. Middle-class households are in a medical crisis. Outsourced jobs are busted pension away from bankruptcy. Contrary to myth, the United States is not becoming more competitive in the global economy by taking the low road. We are in record-breaking debt to other countries. We have record trade deficit, a hollowed-out manufacturing base, and a deteriorating research and development. The infrastructure built by earlier generations of taxpayers has eroded greatly, which all of that's undermined the economy as well as the health and safety of the average American. Households have propped themselves up in the face of falling real wages by maxing out work hours. Americans are working longer hours than ever. Credit cards and home equity loans are at a max. This is not a sustainable course. The road